From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 13th day of July 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the move lower in the soybeans in particular with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Along the way, I'll update you, actually Mark Schleusner of USDA NASS will update you on yesterday's crop production report as it relates to wheat in Illinois and across the United States. And then as we close out our time together, Mike Tenora will have a very interesting weather forecast for next week right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Thanks for being with us, Dan. Let's get right to it. What happened in the market today?
Well, the markets have changed dramatically over the years, and they are becoming more and more mechanically driven by computer systems and people sitting there writing codes and using algorithms and whatnot. And something came along and just triggered all those systems. They started falling short yesterday, and then, you know, they just fall all in line. And this is the type of selling that came about. Now, I don't know what it was specifically, but I mean, the weather pattern has changed, and when you're in a weather-driven market where the trade perceives the crop is getting smaller, and of course we got confirmation of that on Monday afternoon's report, where we did see a drop in crop rating levels, and then the weather pattern, you know, began to change a little bit. And now we're back looking at maybe better chances of rain, I think, in the northern Corn Belt. But I don't necessarily think the growing season weather scare system is over with yet. We still have a lot to go when it comes to, you know, weather. July is kind of the month where corn's made, but corn is running 2 weeks behind. August is the month that soybeans are made, and, you know, beans are still 2 to 3 weeks behind, too, in maturity. So there's still a lot of weather in this market. But in the near term here, you know, USDA's report yesterday probably, you could probably say, maybe tipped the scales to the bearish side, because it reminded everyone of the large supplies that we have. Not only here in the United States, but around the world. Now, I think they're totally out to lunch with their yield projections and whatnot, but that is not uncommon for USDA to leave yield projections pretty well the same, unless you're in. I have seen them change a time or two, I think, over my career, but the odds of them changing yield projections during July are pretty slim, and by not doing that, then that made the balance sheets look terrible, because the trade is wanting to use smaller yields than what USDA has on their balance sheet. So that was kind of a disappointment to the trade. So if anybody was long the market thinking that they was going to maybe get a bullish report, was totally disappointed. Actually, it gave the people, the bears in the market, the incentive to kind of lean on the market a little bit. And then that began to trigger the stops. And, you know, here we are here today. I mean, corn futures have taken the biggest bath technically. I mean, we just basically lost everything that we've gained. We're back to kind of where we started or have been for most of the year in the mid-80s for corn. But that doesn't necessarily mean that this market can't come back some. And like I said, weather is going to be the key driving force yet. And I'm not even too sure USDA is going to tell us a whole bunch on the August crop report, they may. That could be a little different situation. But I've been in the opinion from day one that we're not going to know anything until the combines start rolling this fall, and we'll see how this the adverse spring weather pattern impacted the genetics, and how this adverse weather here and there have impacted the genetics. So I think it's more of kind of wait and see what the yield's going to be. But in the meantime, we're dealing with these bigger numbers. And the other thing that was an observation, and I don't talk to probably as many traders around the country or around the globe as I used to, but I still keep in touch with a half a dozen key people. And what was interesting, sales were extremely heavy earlier in the week. Farmers sold corn and beans and new crop corn and new crop beans. And some of the merchandisers that you talk to, it was the busiest day in their career. So that tells you there was huge country movement. Now, I think that's all bullish long term, because now that's all priced into the market. But you're going to have, you know, we got the hangover from that right now, and we'll have to see how everything shakes out, and let the July crop report kind of get behind us a little bit, and then we'll see what the weather pattern truly is, whether or not we get the rains that some of the guys are calling for, and then what kind of total amounts that we get. We'll just have to kind of wait and see that. But soybeans are still probably in the best technical shape, even though they had a big down day. When you kind of look at the retracement levels of the advance that we had out of that 907 low, we're kind of sitting at, we closed somewhere around, let's say, 45% retracement level. I would have liked to seen us hold the 38% retracement level. But we're still above the 50% retracement level. We'll see kind of what happens here tomorrow. Corn went all the way back 76%, which is a Fibonacci number. We lost everything that we still have 24% of the advance that we had out of the 374 low on December corn. My guess is the market is going to try to consolidate here and take a breather. I'll have to see what open interest actually did on today's decline and see what's left of the market. But it's just interesting times. It's very difficult to market commodities. I mean, farmers have a real chore on their hand trying to market their grain. It's just going to be tougher and tougher.
Yeah. So I was thinking back to last week for Commodity Week with you and Jerry Gulke, and you gave a disclaimer up front. You gave a disclaimer in the back. And I think most of those who listen to you on the air and have been for more than 20 years understand or understood what that means. And I know when I called the Andersons on Monday, I couldn't get through to them. And I'm pretty sure that that was one of the reasons why. That everybody looks at that weather, they understand what that means. I have to tell you, I called out this morning, Dan, to Castleton Grain, which is about 20 miles due west of Fargo, North Dakota, because I wanted to see what they were thinking there. They're a dollar under on soybeans today. Dollar under on new crop. But that's 10 cents wider than it had been. So even there, in that part of the world where we think there's a really tough time, they're getting wider. Now, I'm going to drive out there next week. I won't be live or on the air at all next week, except for maybe Monday and Thursday. And we'll talk with you again next Thursday. But there's just a lot happening in the marketplace. And there's a lot of big money, too. The one thing that we've talked about, Dan, a lot was the bigger money, the funds. Getting out of their shorts? Did they get back in today? Do you know?
I don't know. I imagine you did see new selling. I mean, you don't go down like you did here today without new selling to drive it down. So my guess is that, but you know, when you talk about a fund, that is somewhat too broadly. I mean, that there's all kinds of different types of funds, and your technically driven funds, I'm sure they're short. Now your fundamentally driven funds, I don't know what kind of management, risk management systems they have underneath their market, if they got big positions, if they got covered, if they were long the market and they had puts or whatever. But a lot of these funds do have crossed hedges on them and that, so you really don't necessarily know exactly. But there's a million hedge fund managers. I mean, that's been the popular career for the last 20 years, is become a hedge fund manager. But my guess, we did see some new selling coming into this market. But we'll just have to kind of wait and see on that. But, you know, part of the, and of course, it's no secret that there are certain farm policy measures that are in place that I totally detest. And I think it's the wrong signal. And, you know, when you start talking about North and South Dakota raising corn and soybeans, that's one of the reasons why prices are cheap. And they never did that in the past. I mean, they were basically wheat growers. I got a lot of relatives from my grandmother's side in North Dakota. So I know a little bit about North Dakota, but I mean, but I remember the National Corn Growers Association had me go up and speak at the founding meeting of the North Dakota Corn Growers Association, Fargo, North Dakota, back in like 1989 or something like that. And I go, say what? You're organizing a corn growers group in North Dakota? And I was just totally amazed at that. Yeah, I mean, agriculture is changing a lot. And as long as farm policy positions encourage production, we're going to have an adequate supply of corn and soybeans. And that's basically what the market reflected today.
Hey, thanks so much. And we'll call you next week. I'll be in Fargo on Thursday at the Growers Day for Anheuser-Busch InBev.
That'll be an interesting That'd be interesting. I bet you're going to learn a lot about North Dakota.
I think so. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week, Dan.
Very well.
That, of course, Dan Zwicker with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, Nebraska Agriculture Director Greg Ibaugh is said to be in the running for a top post at the United States Department of Agriculture. Politico reports that several unnamed sources say Ibaugh is being considered, which would put yet another Midwestern farmer at the top of the department. Ibaugh has led the Nebraska Agriculture Department since 2005. Politico speculates that Ibaugh is most likely in the running for Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, which oversees the Agricultural Marketing Service, Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, and the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration. Iowa Ag Secretary Bill Northey and Indiana Ag Director Ted McKinney are reported to be in the running for the newly created Undersecretary post for Domestic Farm Services and Trade, respectively. Also, Iowa economist Sam Clovis, a longtime Trump ally, is said to be the pick for the Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics. It's important at this point to note that all but Ibaugh have been in the running for these positions since much earlier this spring and have yet to take on the posts. Well, as Jackie Vakes noted yesterday during our closing market report, a Chinese investment fund has paid $1.1 billion to purchase Dow Chemical Company's seed business in Brazil, a move Reuters calls a further sign of China's fast-expanding role in the global seed sector. The assets, which generated revenue of about $287 million in 2016, are being sold by Dow to meet conditions set by U.S. antitrust regulators for its $130 billion merger with DuPont. The deal will boost China's share of the global seed business, which now includes the $43 billion takeover of Syngenta by state-owned ChemChina. ChemChina officials said recently the company is looking to snap up seed assets that rival Bayer must sell to gain regulatory approval for its takeover of Monsanto. Well, let's move back to Washington now, where House appropriators have sent to the full House the FY18 Department of Agriculture and Food and Drug Administration spending bill, reversing many of the president's proposed cuts. The $145 billion bipartisan House bill is $4 billion above the president's request, but $8.6 billion below the current spending. Still, it restores many of President Trump's cuts to rural development, research, crop insurance, and international food and feeding programs, says the chair of the Appropriations Committee, New Jersey Republican Rodney Frelinghuysen.
In addition to these important agricultural support and research programs, this bill provides a total of $2.6 billion for rural development. These programs help grow our economy by developing critical rural infrastructure, providing important business and industry loans to help small businesses thrive in rural markets.
SNAP is still cut by almost $5 billion to $74 billion. The minority offered few amendments directed at production agriculture. Riders dealing with horse slaughter and e-cigarette advertising failed. Swaps regulatory relief passed earlier by the full House was adopted. And the sugar program reform was withdrawn. The Department of Agriculture's part of the spending bill includes $1.8 billion for the new USDA trade mission headed for the Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs. The bill reverses the president's proposal to eliminate funding for the nation's two international feeding programs, fully staffs county farm service agencies, offices, and keeps open 17 USDA research facilities the administration wanted to close, including the one in Peoria, Illinois. The bill includes $2.8 billion for ag research, more than $900 million for the Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, and about the same for conservation programs, and just over $1 billion for food safety and inspection. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, some of those wheat numbers we didn't talk very much about yesterday. Mark Schleusner is here from USDA NASS.
This is Mark Schleusner, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. On July 12, NASS released the July crop production report. Here are some highlights for Illinois and the U.S. For winter wheat in Illinois, NASS forecast the 2017 wheat yield to be 75 bushels per acre, up 2 bushels from 1 month ago, and a new record high yield for the state. Harvested acres are estimated at 490,000, and the total production of wheat in Illinois is projected to be 36.8 million bushels. For winter wheat at the U.S. level, the average yield is forecast at 49.7 bushels per acre, up nearly 1 bushel from last month, but down more than 5 bushels from last year. The total production of winter wheat in the U.S. is forecast at 1.28 billion bushels, down 23% from last year. For spring wheat at the U.S. level, the average yield is forecast at 40.3 bushels per acre, down nearly 7 bushels from 1 year ago. The total production of spring wheat is projected to be 423 million bushels, down 21% from last year. I would like to thank all of the producers that responded to our July agricultural yield survey. Your individual reports are always confidential by law, but they contribute to the state totals, which are important to the agricultural community. Your assistance is greatly appreciated. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, reminding you to participate in the Census of Agriculture coming this December.
Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about today and what farmers have been saying.
I don't think I can say it on the air, actually, what they've been saying, but it hasn't been pretty. You know what, Todd? I mean, bottom line on this whole rally up, we were telling producers, we've got to sell some increments. You know, yes, we understand that the weather is a problem, but whenever you get above spring insurance price on both corn and soybeans, it's probably a smart thing to take a look at sales, especially with the producers that, you know, had the calls in place. It gives you a lot more confidence to go ahead and make sales. But this was a tough day. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, soybeans just got kicked in the pants, you know, and corn market can't seem to catch a break either. So definitely a ton of fun liquidation at this point, just selling the heck out of both corn and beans.
You think there'll be follow through?
You know, at this point, I mean, personally, I feel like in the long run, I'm a buyer in here. For end users, I would be stepping in and buying needs for both corn and soybean products. But, you know, at this point, obviously, we've done some technical damage. It's pretty tough on both markets. But absolutely, I think long term, unless this weather shifts significantly, I just don't see an opportunity for us to make a lot of money selling this thing right now.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora is with us from T-Storm out of Chicago, Illinois, as usual. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Let's get right to things very quickly. The weather has been pushing the market for a couple of weeks now. It turned things around today, and down it went. This is based on some rainfall that may or may not be coming next week. I want to get to that, but start with where we are today in the Midwest, please.
Well, if you look at rainfall over the last week, up until yesterday morning, so this does not include some of the rain that we had in Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri over the last 24 hours, only about 39 to 40% of U.S. corn and soybean production received at least 1 inch of rain over the last week. Most of the dry areas are still in the same areas that were dry as of just about a week ago today. That's mainly across the plains and the western half of the Corn Belt. So even though some areas of Nebraska and Iowa did see some rain this week, it's pretty much over now, and we have to start looking to the next rain event to start filling in some of these dry areas. The next chance of rain develops here next Tuesday and Wednesday in the northern areas of the Corn Belt and plains, and then expands on to the south over the second half of next week and into next weekend. At this point, we're pretty comfortable forecasting 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches of rain across the northern corn and soybean areas, with amounts to become a little bit more questionable as you head on to the south. As you head on to the south as well, we'll also see some heat next week, and the combination of dry and hot conditions with some of these areas that will still need some rain leads you to conclude that these rains next week are pretty important. If we do see a widespread rain event next week, that would take a lot of pressure off of all of these crops. But if that rain were to fail to materialize, then I think we'd have a pretty strong argument to make that we need considerably more rain. One thing I'd like to point out with you, Todd, is that we keep a calculation of subsoil moisture here that we run every day, and it basically looks at rainfall over the last 30 days, and then we can figure out how wet or dry each crop in the U.S. is. Well, if you take a look at what we see right now, it doesn't really look all that unusual. Rainfall over the last 30 days has been pretty similar to 5 of the 6 last growing seasons at this point in July, with only the drought in 2012 having been much, much drier than anything that we have today. But the difference going forward between this year and the next, or those 5 of the last 6 years, is that we had a big rain event over June 13th to 19th across the entire central U.S. Widespread rainfall was in the 1 to 3 inch range, and all of that is going to be removed from our calculation here over the next week. And that's only going to put more pressure on that rain next week, because we need to make up for all the rain we're going to remove. And if, again, that rain next week is not widespread and substantial, we'll start to see subsoil dryness come up quite a bit over the next 7 to 10 days.
Do the northern areas you mentioned include the Dakotas?
Well, the best overall chance is where it's been over the last couple of weeks, and that's pretty much centered near Minnesota and Wisconsin. As you head to the west and to the south from there, we do have rain chances, but the best chances at this point in time are, again, right around Minnesota and Wisconsin. We really need these rains to hit the eastern Dakotas, western Minnesota, and then on to the south through western Iowa and eastern Nebraska. There certainly is a chance for rain out in these areas next week, because we will have some heat in place. We'll also have some waves of energy nearby. But this whole event is still 5 to 7 days into the future. And just because of that alone, you always have to have some uncertainty. So we could end up either turning into a wetter scenario or a drier scenario, just depending on how things work out. And we think that we really won't have a ton of confidence in the exact setup until Saturday or Sunday coming up.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.